Hi, this is Mark Cuniberti. You're about to listen to another edition of our award-winning economic show entitled Money Matters. The information given on this show is obtained from a variety of public sources and is deemed accurate at time of airing but is not guaranteed. This show is pre-recorded at an earlier date, so market indices and related stock market references may not be accurate at time of airing, and we will not be taking any listener call-ins. Thanks again for listening. Now enjoy the show. Welcome to your economic show entitled Money Matters on your community radio station. My name is Mark Cuniberti. Please be advised, discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I am an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. And for this show, indices mentioned are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Investing involves risk. Depending on the types of investments, there may be varying degrees of risk. Investors should be prepared to bear loss, including total loss of principal. Views expressed are my opinions only, of course, and the opinions of those I may have on the show or the articles I may read. They do not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge, the station, its staff members, or underwriters. Welcome to the 276th show, entitled The Recent Fallout, or you could call it The Recent Fall Route. Money Matters is about money. As money does matter and matters of money affects us all in some way or another, whether you have a lot of it, a little of it, or none of it, it controls our economy, our country, our planet, and in some way or another controls the very way we live our lives. It's about your money or lack of it or abundance of it. It's about your lives and livelihood. In short, this show is about you. That's right. My name's Mark Cuniberti. How are you? Well, okay then. Did y'all have fun the last 2-3 weeks since I've been away? Yow. Okay, so let's get to the market, shall we? Well, yeah. The Dow had a high, intermittent high, you know, 3 or 4 months ago, 26,616. It got to, about a month and a half ago, somewhere near 26,900 something. And then the floor came out. I guess you could comfortably say that. So what happened? What caused it? Well, first of all, let me tell you my take on it, my opinion of it. It was, for me, a little bit unexpected, the ferocity of it, the velocity of it. You know, the ferocity. It was just ferocity? Well, velocity. You know, I had my ears on. But it did come apart fairly quickly. So where before, you know, I have been in tune and we publicly make, you know, known with the permission of the regulators that if we go positive the market or negative the market. And, you know, this particular time I did have my ears on. It was coming into the fall last year about this time. 2017, in July, we were market name neutral to negative in that period. And not much really happened. So, again, with permission of regulators, we said we went market positive again. We went market positive when Trump was elected. Not necessarily because I support Trump or not, just because the market had told us that, it wanted to go up. We were market negative into the election. And then when he came out and the markets took off, that day and the next 3 days, we went market positive and said so on the show, and regulators said, you can say that, so I did. So I had my ears on for this. I did not expect it to be so fast and brutal. And also, I did not expect it to be so wide-based. Now, what I mean by that is I look at a variety of different things, you know, and I always use the example of, you ever seen a drag car race where they have, like, you know, the orange lights go down, the tree, I think they call it the Christmas tree, and the orange lights go down, and then it finally goes green. You know, it goes red, orange, green, right? So for me, you know, we watch these various signals, okay? And now what I watch, you know, the first light for me is stocks, okay? When stocks, normal stocks start to go down, that's the first light. It really doesn't concern me. The second light for me is that the leaders start to follow, the leaders being whatever stocks are in, you know, the real ones that are running and that are popular. You know, you might say, someone might say they might be like Apple or Facebook or some of the leaders at that time. I'm not saying these are good stocks to buy. Just saying these are what we call market leaders. When they start to fall as well, they're usually the last ones to fall, in my opinion. When they start to fall as well, that's the second light. And then when we see things like fixed income, like preferred stocks or bonds, or even something in the area of utilities. Remember, your grandmother used to own PG&E and utilities. When they start to rise, that means money's coming out of the market and then going into utilities and fixed income. That's the third light, so I look at that. The fourth light I look at is junk bonds, okay? Now, junk bonds is a bond is an IOU. You should know that from listening to this show. It's just an IOU. You give somebody their money, they give you a piece of paper back as an IOU, and sometimes they call it a bond in the financial industry. We like to confuse you, so we call things that you borrow from banks for houses, we call those mortgages. Your brother-in-law gives you a bond. He actually calls that a note, or you borrow money for you, the state borrows money from you, we call that a municipal bond. The feds borrow money from you, they might call that a savings bond or a treasury or treasury bill. So all these things are just IOUs. When we say junk bonds are bonds that are paying a relatively higher interest rate than safe bonds, or some relatively what we regard as safer. For instance, when Apple comes out and borrows money, Apple doesn't have to pay a high interest rate because it's Apple and people believe in Apple. I'm not saying that you should believe in Apple. I'm saying people believe in Apple. So Apple comes out and floats a bond, floats an IOU, borrows money from you. They may pay 0.5%, 0.25%, or whatever it is, fairly low. Or you have companies that are really need your money, and they have to pay a high interest rate to get your money because they're risky, or they're perceived as being risky. So we call those the ones that are really high returns, or junk bonds, or companies are paying high interest rates, not because they want to, because they have to. I can't get any money unless I pay 8%. That's junk bonds. Fourth light for me is when junk bonds start to fall. Okay, junk bonds start to fall. So that's the fourth light. And then the fifth light, which I really start to get concerned about, is if corporate bonds start to fall. Corporate bonds are a little bit better bonds. They're bonds that are, you know, higher rated. If they start to go down, then it's really, you know, then I'm really, really like, ooh. And then, of course, if state municipal bonds start to go down after that, that's when really a red light goes on to me. So it depends on how many lights go on. So there are other things that I look at. There's something called the flattening yield curve. That's kind of too complicated to get into right now. I have gotten into it before. And the other thing that's a major red light for me is when currencies in particular countries start to go under, like we had the Turkish lira go under. Not go under, just come under stress. And Greece, you all know about the Grexit, the Greece, and now there's things in the news about Italy. When major currencies, major countries have problems, that supersedes a lot of the lights for me. I do not like myself, my opinion, when currencies go under, because they, in my opinion, can really start to have contagion. In other words, you know, once something like Turkish, if they did go under, you know, you might start to see then Greek might go under, and it just, so I'm really alert to currencies. So those are the lights that go off. And I hadn't seen, you ever been over a few lights, we were coming into fall, that can be a time for market routes, as you know. We had seen the Turkish lira get into some trouble about 2 months ago. That was a kind of a light to me, although it didn't seem to be bleeding off too much. We had the flattening yield curve. We had tariffs, you know. The tariffs, I think, was kind of a big one. We talked about tariffs are taxes on imports. And I'm in favor of tax credits. I wrote an article on it and did a show on it, and it got a lot of good response for that one. If the government wants to protect a domestic company, they can put tariffs or taxes on incoming imports. My take on the thing is if the government wanted to help a domestic country, I mean, a domestic company here, like the steel industry, which is why they said they needed the tariffs, you could give the steel industry a credit, tax credit, instead of a tariff on Chinese steel or whatever steel you're bringing in. The belief is, and I think it's a pretty valid belief, that when you put tariffs on things, the reason as you do it is to protect, let's say, United States steel companies. But in actuality, when you put a tariff on it, the money just goes into the Washington coffers. And because you've now made part of the supply higher in price, right? You have United States steel and imported steel. And when you put tariffs on imported steel, you've now kind of made part of that imported steel. You've made part of the steel that we use higher in price. That brings up the price of everything steel-based. So when you put a tariff on it, it causes inflation. If you wanted to protect steel companies, you could just give them a tax credit that would lower the price of a particular proportion of steel, and that would cause deflation or lowering prices. So tariffs are inflationary. And what happens when you put tariffs on China's stuff and tariffs on other countries' stuff, they turn around and put tariffs on your stuff. So it was only a matter of time. You know, in a growth economy like we have, where it grows 5-7% a year or year over year, and you expect that sort of growth, 4 or 5 or 6 or 7%, and you start slapping tariffs on imports, you cause the prices to rise here, and then anytime a price rises, the demand drops off, right? That's price and supply, price and demand curve. And then if somebody else starts smacking tariffs on your goods, then you sell less. So we have all these multinational companies that sell stuff overseas, and if they had their stuff taxed or tariffed, then their earnings would start to fall. And we did see some earnings start to get hurt. So we had rising interest rates. We had a flattening yield curve. We had a rally that went a long time. We had Trump shooting off his mouth. We had tariffs. We had interest rates were being increased by the Federal Reserve. We had a lot of things that were starting to throw off lights. And the Dow finally collapsed. I don't know if collapse is a good word. It finally gave in. Now, it really only went from 26.9 on the high down to 24-something. I don't remember the exact. I could look it up, 24-something. So you're looking at, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10% correction there, which is not horrific. You know, I think back in 09, you saw a halving, you know, cut in half. But I think the tariffs, you know, didn't help. It didn't help. And so I did not expect that fast. Okay, but what's nice about a particular strategy that we have indicated on this show that I use and that other entities may use, I can't speak for anybody else, okay? I can assume that there are certain people out there that use this strategy. But it doesn't matter whether I expect it or not, because the strategy that I've talked about on the show, and it has been approved to talk on the show, is that, you know, we have a trailing stop or a stop strategy. Now what that means is if the garbage can in your kitchen is on fire, you hit it with a fire extinguisher, okay? You're alarmed, but you put the fire out. However, if the fire spreads to the stove and into the ceiling, you get out. So that's basically what a stop is, okay? So when we have portfolios that have holdings in them, I have certain levels where if it reaches that downward, we're out. And they get triggered at certain areas. So if it goes down, you know, 200 and something points, first one triggers. And if it keeps going down, second one triggers. And the third one triggers. And it sells it. And when it sells it, it converts it to cash. And the more cash you have in your portfolio, the less it moves. So when the Dow started to drop, if I had all stocks in the portfolio, or a lot of stocks in the portfolio, I really don't make portfolios with all stocks in there. I think that's a little too risky, my opinion. As the Dow starts to drop, we start ejecting securities, stocks, and I go to more cash. So market starts to fall, the portfolios might start to fall in concert with the market. And then as these things are ejected, even though the market may be falling at the same rate, the principles of portfolios will slowly not fall as fast because you're holding more cash. Okay? You're holding more cash. And so that's not my opinion. When you hold more cash in a portfolio, the balances don't move as much, right? If you hold all stocks and the stock market crashes, well, your balances are going to be hammered. But if you own 10% stocks and the rest cash and the market starts to fall, then you're not going to be hurt as badly. So this is not something that, you know, is rocket science or that I'm making up. More cash means more stability in your portfolio. So as the market goes down, whether I expected it or not, the stops are there. And so certain positions are ejected as it goes down. If it goes down more, it keeps ejecting. And then when it stops, if I'm looking for myself, I'm looking for these velocities of falls every day to stop. Then we have something called a climax top or a climax bottom. That's a theory. No theory is foolproof, but I do look for it. Climax bottom or climax top means that instead of falling and falling and falling, it falls hard and bounces radically. A couple days ago, we had a 900-point swing. It was down 300-400 and then popped up 500. And so the swing of the Dow was about 900 points. So that was a wild bounce up and down. And that could be determined to be, in hindsight, a climax bottom. Same thing with a climax top. Stocks run up. And then at the top, they kind of bounce wildly. And these climax bottoms and tops could, not necessarily, but could, and in my opinion, can indicate a change in direction. So when I saw 3 days ago that 900-point swing in the Dow, you know, I could have perceived that as a climax bottom. So, I would imagine that portfolio balances were hit. No doubt about that. Some portfolio profits were probably eliminated. Some probably may have went negative. I can't speak to what everybody's balance did. I can only speak to what, you know, what mine did on the show, and I'm not allowed to talk about that. So I can just basically say that a couple days ago, you know, I may have perceived that as a climax bottom, and I may have started adding. That doesn't mean that it's over. And these things, you know, one nice thing about stops, you know, on the way down, they eject. Now, trailing stops are a little bit different. Trailing stops are, let's say you bought a stock at 100 and it went to 130, okay? Now, when I bought the stock at 100, maybe I had a stop, a protection at 90. So if I bought it at 100 and it got to 90, it would then turn into a market order and it goes up to sell. Now, if I have a stop at 90, it doesn't mean it sells at 90. It means when it hits 90, it becomes a market order. So I could get 90, I could get lower than 90, or I get more than 90. It basically says when it hits 90, put it out for sale and see how much you get for it. All right, stop limits, orders are a little bit different, all right? And I won't get into that, but stop orders that work that way. When you hit a certain point, it becomes a market order, and where you get executed is anybody's guess. Hopefully, if it's not going too fast, you'll get executed close to your stop price. Trailing stops, you buy a stock at 100, goes to 130. Instead of having the stop at 90, I raise the stop now. So I bought it at 100, I had a stop at 90, as an example only, fictitional example, and then the stock ran to 130, I eliminated the stop at 90 and raised the stop to 120. Now if the stock turns and reverses from 130, hits 120, it then becomes a market order again, and I get out, hopefully retaining some of the profits that I made from 100 to wherever they execute me. So stop orders do not guarantee against losses or do not guarantee against a guaranteed loss. Stop orders just basically say, I want out and I want a market order when it hits. So stop limits a little bit different. So, you know, everybody has an opinion, right? Out on Yahoo Finance this morning, November 1st, 2018, written by Mark DeCambre. And it's entitled Godfather of Chart Analysis says damage done to the stock market is much, much worse than anyone is talking about. Basically, he says, quote, prominent market technician Ralph Acampora says the stock market is in bad shape and it's worse than many on Wall Street investors appreciate. A pioneer in the field of chart-based trading, Acampora says the technical damage that has resulted in the Dow Jones Industrial Average and the S&P 500 Index erasing all their gains for 2018 and the NASDAQ falling into correction territory, usually characterized as a decline of at least 10% from a recent peak, will take months to repair. So that's his opinion. I could probably read you another opinion of somebody else that would say the exact opposite. Okay, so we don't know. Also out, Apple reports earnings after the close today. This, you know, this could really move the market. We don't know what's going to happen. It's a crapshoot. People at Apple know what's going to happen because they know, at least the accountants know, but nobody knows. So we don't know what's going to happen now. Apple could definitely move the market as part of the Dow. It's a big part of the Dow. So we'll see what happens. For those of you rooting for a market fall, and there are some that do, if Apple posts terrible earnings, you will probably get your wish. Probably. Not absolutely. If Apple posts really, really good earnings, those rooting for a market rise might see that. Okay. Apple has been up 30% this year. Just kind of keeps going. Anyway, so the damage, you know, the damage was severe. And it was broad-based. Some of the items that did see particular areas of gain during the crash, some of the items was like the dollar stores, you know, those saw some gains. Tobacco, utilities saw some gains. Some of the consumer staples, companies that resemble companies like Clorox, Procter & Gamble, they could have seen increases because these are some of the companies that are regarded as defensive. Okay, when you buy like a Clorox or a Procter & Gamble or Kraft Heinz, they're boring. Not to say they can't run a lot. Clorox went from 110 to 150 in the last 6 and 8 months. But they could, of course, it had dropped from 152. But normally, some people think that food stocks and staples, Clorox, Procter & Gamble, Kraft Heinz, food companies are defensive. Some believe that utilities, you know, the power companies are defensive. Some believe that corporate bonds are defensive, just depending on what you believe. So we'll have to keep an eye on Apple. That closes after the close today at 1. So it usually takes them 10, 15 minutes before it starts hitting Newswire. So about 1:15 when I get out of here, you probably start seeing things happen. I'm looking at a lot of different charts for different securities. And, the damage, definitely, you know, 20, 30, 40% in some of these things. Just, you know, it was really, really brutal, real brutal. The last few weeks, as of course seen the market throw its version of a hissy fit, tossing stock prices to and fro. Mostly fro. I don't even know that proper English. Mostly fro. But I wrote it, and the editors passed it, so what is to say? Which, when I say fro, which is to say most stocks went down. Not all, mind you. Not all stocks went down. Not all, mind you. Some stocks tend to go up. Some things go up when thing falls, bucking the trend of majority stocks. Remember, for every winner, there's a loser, right? Okay. In any case, investors may have been shell-shocked at the speed and breadth of the decline, which likely decimated the balance of many portfolios. I can comfortably say the three possibilities. You had a gain, and you gave some of it back. You had a gain, and you broke even. You had a gain, and you're still negative. One of those three things happened if you had a gain. If you were even, you were probably now even or negative, badly so. There you go. In any case, investors may have been shell-shocked at the speed and breadth of the decline, which likely may have decimated the balances of many portfolios. When markets go down, and they keep going down, it's not comfortable seeing your hard-earned money evaporate in the smoke-filled room of a market freefall. It's not a good thing. It hurts. It can cause you lack of sleep. Some people are like, markets go up, markets go down, I don't care. But some people get very involved. And of course, when I'm managing portfolios, I don't like to see portfolios that I manage go down, you know, which is one of the reasons I put stops in and trailing stops. You know, I'm not a rider. I'm not riding the horse all the way down to the bottom of the canyon. I'm jumping off. You know what I mean? I don't hold stocks for the long term can be dangerous because it means hold through the downturn. Hold stocks for the long term. I don't want to hold stocks through the downturn. They say the market is a place of fear and greed. And seldom is there a middle ground for common sense to calm a nervous Nellie, a concerned spouse, or a hardworking family who's a wage earner when seeing their dollars quickly disappearing down the rat hole of Wall Street. If an investor knew the market would eventually stop going down, he or she might take comfort in knowing such a fact. In reality, a fact could be argued that it eventually goes up again. But it doesn't always happen within the time frame that might be palatable for many. Indeed, 2009-2010 fell so far and so fast, even those that were comfortable with the markets go up and the market goes down were beginning to really worry. One only has to look at the long-term chart of a Dow, or any major index for that matter, to witness a long but definitely interrupted line rising from left to right, basically meaning over time things to keep rising. Now, I attribute a lot of that to inflation. The price of a stock goes up like the price of a candy bar. Chart the two. And, you know, not all of that is if stock market goes up because stocks are great. Stock market goes up over long term, in my opinion, partially because it's reflecting inflation. And indeed, some believe that it is inflation, that when it happens, the stock market is a good place to hide. It will be a good proxy of inflation. It might not be proportional, but it may protect you some. That the markets do tend to rise given enough time, at least historically, at times that time period that it takes to reverse can be nerve-wracking. Obsessive thoughts of, I'm going to lose it all, tend to gnaw on the consciousness and unconsciousness, if asleep, of many an investor, causing lack of sleep, high blood pressure, anxiety, and a host of other emotions that for the most part make life a miserable experience, at least monetarily, if not momentarily. Kind of nice sentence, wasn't that? Sometimes I come out with these sentences that are just, not to be self-serving, but sometimes I read back and I say, boy, what was I on? See? That for the most part make life a miserable existence, at least monetarily, if not momentarily. Something about that sentence is, I like it. Considering I once got a D in English. Yeah. Believe it or not, it's the only D I ever had. That the markets over time have a rising shape to them when looked at through the decades. We must also note that there have been times when it took a very, very long time for the market to recoup the damage in a major sell-off. During those long periods of waiting to break even, again, can frustrate investors as portions of their paycheck go into the black hole of an IRA and another stock account or other stock account only to somehow disappear as balances stagnate or even fall. The imagination tends to a what if? My imagination says the stock market is falling. What if it doesn't stop? Meaning instead of the comfort of believing in the optimistic outcomes, the mind may tend to dwell on the worst-case scenarios. Trust me, we've all been there. This is not to say I believe in hold for the long term. This is not to say that I believe in hold for the long term. Indeed, one could say that hold for the long term always worked for real estate until it didn't. And it always worked for stocks until it didn't. But I'm of the opinion, had the feds not rescued the 08-09 economic implosion, which in reality did come close to destroying the entire financial system of the round ball we call Earth, had that happened, life on this planet would have changed, as you know it, for a very long time, and not in a good way. That is, if you believe what the central bankers of the world told us as they showered trillions with a T, into and onto almost every financial nook and cranny that bled red. It's another one of those sentences, that bled red. My brain works in very strange ways. Without such a life raft, it may have been quite possible that entire fortunes would have been obliterated. Without the life raft from the Fed, it could have been quite possible that entire fortunes would have been obliterated. My opinion, along with millions of IRAs, pension plans, life savings, and what have you. Some do argue. Up until today, still argue. The central bankers of the world could not possibly rescue us again if another catastrophe occurred of that magnitude, claiming central bankers just don't have the quiver of monetary arrows that they had back then. They have shot a lot of them off. I kind of believe they can just make more arrows, right? I mean, they can make money. But many believe, and I'm not saying that the feds could rescue us again. I'm just saying there are very scholarly authors that said it could not be rescued again. Basically, the feds and the central banks shot a lot of their arrows off the last time and couldn't repeat the performance even if they were faced with such a reoccurring event as the 08-09 crisis, even if they wanted to rescue it. I can truly say that I don't know what the case is. We will not know. And hopefully I really don't want to find out. But it does make one ponder a few things, right? When I say that. None of the things that you are pondering will probably help you sleep better at night. Doesn't help me sleep better at night. We would all like to trust that the feds and their global counterparts, right? That the feds and their global counterparts would have things under control should another market rout turn into an all-out freefall. After all, they had things entirely under control in 08 and 09, right? Or did they? You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. We'll be right back. All right, so the Dow, 26,900, the top, low about, I don't know, 6-9 months ago, 23,500, somewhere in there. Sitting at 25,346. Now, I told you, and I tell you every show, these large numbers, the 1,000 numbers, are major support and resistance levels, so say some analysts. In other words, we're at 25,346. So the round number, the 1,000 number that is round below us is 25,000. And the number that is 1,000 above is 26,000. So if we're sitting at 25,346, up 230 and 69, the Dow. 25,000 below us is a support level. There are many minor support levels that analysts look at. They have all sorts of theories. But it's generally believed that these big numbers, 25,000, 26,000, 27,000, 22,000, are more supportive or more have more resistance in them to vault them or fall through them on the way down. And once they go through those, if they remain below those, it's hard to climb back above. So anything above us is called resistance level. 26,000 would be resistance. Anything below us, 25,000, since we're sitting at 25,346, is support. That's not saying it can't blow through up or down any of these numbers. It can. But generally, when it hovers around those numbers, you could say historically, on occasion, it will fight going below it or above these big round numbers. And so, so what to do? Well, you know, I can't tell everyone what to do. I can only tell you what I do. And that is the initiate stops on the way down. Okay, you know, you got to have an exit strategy. You don't know. I mean, if this guy that we talked to, right, godfather of chart analysis, says damage done in the stock market is much, much worse. You know, this is the article I read earlier from Market Watch. It was on Yahoo Finance, but it's on Market Watch by Mark DeCambre, referring to prominent market technician Al Ancampora. He's a technical analyst, you know. You know, if you were to believe something like that, you know, I could read the other articles that basically say, you know, the world's going to come apart. And I read a handful of analysts that say the world's great and the market's going to continue to run. So, you know, and it's really common, you know, as an advisor, I get people to send me an article from a particular person that they read. And this person is forecasting doom and gloom on a catastrophic scale. And they say, Mark, did you see this? We're doomed. And I could comfortably say, yes, or I've seen something very similar. And I could show you an exactly opposite article. I could show you 10 that would scare the you-know-what out of you. And I could show you 10 that would make you sell the house, sell the farm, and buy stocks. I mean, nobody knows. Nobody knows. And because I don't know, and because I can be surprised, I have stops and trailing stops. That's what I do. Garbage cans on fire, I'll put it out. I'll stay in the stock market. Kitchen couches on fire, I'll start to move the kids out and the dog and the cat and all my files. Slowly, I'll move them more out as the fire spreads. And then if it stops, once we clean up, we'll start to move in again. Like adding securities now that I've been stopped out. Market starts to turn. I want to participate, right? So I might will be adding securities as I perceive that the craziness is over. You know, and there's also something called a head fake. You know, a head fake is, you know, it goes up and it crashes and it goes up again and people say, okay, it's over. And then it fakes out, it goes back down again. That could happen, which is why when I go out in steps, right? A little bit out, a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more. When the market is perceived by me that it is safe to enter, safer, or at least appears safer, then I start to average in a little bit at a time. In case I'm wrong, always ask yourself in anything, what if I'm wrong? You know, I see a lot of stuff on social media, political stuff, the hurling of vile, putrid stones of hate back and forth between the two parties. And one party is completely convinced that they're right, and the other party is completely convinced that they're right. And I would just ask, what if you're wrong? I always seem to ask that. I fall victim of being a human with frailties and faults, like everyone else. But I try to always ask myself, what if I'm wrong? You know, what if I'm wrong? And you know, as an advisor, I have to always ask that question. What if I'm wrong? What if I think the market's going to go up and the bottom comes out? What if I sell everything and the market runs? That's why no matter what I think, I have to have strategies in place. Selling out small pieces, buying in small pieces, in case I'm wrong. And that's prudent. You know, I do not favor any, whatever they call advisors or, you know, brother-in-laws or sisters or whoever I meet in the street or in a restaurant who says, stock market always goes up over the long haul. I just do not buy into that. Because if the people that say the Fed cannot rescue us the second time around are right, right? People say, oh, the Feds will always rescue us. What if they're wrong? What if they can't rescue us? And what if the market does start to go in a free fall? Then you better not hold for the long term, or you'll hold for the downturn until you hold into the disclaimer that I read. Here's the disclaimer. Came down from the regulators. Investors should be prepared to bear loss, including total loss of principal. Did you hear that? Total loss of principal. So there the regulators are telling you that it is possible. They're not saying, don't worry about total loss. The Feds will rescue you. And that's not what this says. You know, this particular disclaimer, when I wrote the show, was added by a regulator. They said, Mark, your show is conditionally approved. but you must add this on to your normal disclaimer. Here's the, what they made me add. Indices mentioned are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Investing involves risk. Depending on the types of investments, there are varying degrees of risk. Investors should be prepared to bear loss, including total loss of principal. Okay? I didn't write that. Somebody sent that to me and said that must be said. So I said it 10 times. So if they're saying it, it's got to be possible, right? So we don't know. So by having mechanisms in place that eject or add slowly, in my opinion, is more prudent, at least against the possibility of total loss or catastrophic loss, than just holding forever. We'll be right back to conclude the show. We have a little bit more, so don't go away. You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station.
We're in the money. We're in the money. We've got a lot of what it takes to get along. We're in the money. The skies are sunny. Old man depression, you are through. You've done us wrong. We never see a headline, but a red line today. And when we see the landlord, we can look that guy right in the eye. We're in the money. Come on, my honey. Let's spend it, spend it, spend it proudly on bond.
All right. I want to mention something. You know, I had a conversation with my wife last night. Kids were gone, so we went out to dinner. There is something very concerning to me in the economy. Very concerning. And it is something I've talked about for a long time. And it is the destroyer of economies. And when an economy is destroyed, the country can be destroyed. Bird flu, nuclear war, you know, can't destroy a country. Economy collapse, economic collapse can. I mean, here's the deal. I don't know about you, but I've been going out to restaurants for a long time. I don't eat out a lot, but maybe once or twice a week. But I do go to a lot of breakfasts. As people go to breakfast, we talk about stocks and stuff on with clients and potential clients. And so I have noticed, have you as noticed, I don't know about you, I would think, but the price of eating out is outrageous. I mean, a friend and I went to a burger place yesterday. We had two burgers and split a fry with no drinks. $40. $40. More often than not, the delis, at least in my county, you buy a sandwich. I mean, anywhere between $9 and $12, and $15 burgers are not out of the question. And I have been noticing that restaurants, at least here, are not as full. How can people afford this? How can you afford that? My wife and I went out to dinner last night. We had two pasta dishes, a salad, soup, a couple glasses of wine, $80. $80. Now, what's interesting, as I was thinking, I was talking to her, I said, you know, it's interesting. The price of eating out is tremendously high. And so are my taxes and fees and assessments on everything I pay. But commodities, the indexes for commodities, I referenced on a show, which was approved about 3 months ago. The commodity indexes were dropping like 7% a year for the last 10 years, not in recent months. So although the things that they're made with commodities, the food in restaurants is going up. If you would invest it in the commodities itself. So I'm wondering, if I'm seeing inflation, I should invest in commodities. But that has been a losing bet. So I said to my wife, you know, you can't invest in commodities, at least at the dinner table, because I wasn't at a trading platform. But my opinion was, you know, dear wife, 10 years ago, I would have said buy commodities. But the commodities, in reality, so my show said 3 months ago where I referenced an article, which I don't have in front of me, commodities have been falling. So why are the things that the restaurant meals are made out of falling or not really going up as much as the price of the food that I'm paying? It's interesting. So I thought, okay, where does one invest in an inflationary environment that is basically destroying the retailer, right? Everything's so expensive, nobody's going out, nobody's going shopping. Well, I think people are going shopping, but nobody's going out. So, I mean, what would you do? Short the restaurant sector? I don't know. I don't like shorting anything. You can handle your head in your wallet quickly. So I mentioned certain things in you know, I said to my wife, I said, you know, it's interesting, in the last market fall, the budget stores, the dollar stores and stuff, their stocks have risen. So I was thinking, okay, inflationary environment, commodities are falling, which is kind of weird. So maybe you could invest in, if somebody was so inclined, you could make a argument to invest in all the cheap stores, whatever they would be, you know, the dollar stores or the, you know, or whatever. Now, I'm not saying this is a recommendation to invest. This is just a thought, okay? Don't invest on my thought. The other thought that I had was maybe there are companies that do bankruptcies. So maybe as a contrary play, in an inflationary environment, when you know the retail customer is going to be smashed with prices, you won't be able to buy anything. So you can't buy retail stores and you can't buy restaurants. You could buy the dollar cheap stores, or you could buy the companies that, you know, specialize in bankruptcy. Now, again, this is not a recommendation to buy or sell securities. That's not a recommendation. It's just a thought that's going in my head. It's my opinion. And I could be totally wrong. Okay. So that'll satisfy the regulars that I said that. And finally, we talked about tariffs. Markets are jumping out on financeyahoo.com. Today, this was Yahoo Finance, November 1st. Stocks jump after Trump announces trade progress with China. Now, I don't put a lot of stock in what he says, because the one day he'll say one thing, the next thing he says another. But on this article, it says President Trump tweeting that trade talks with China's Xi Jinping are going well. Xi Jinping, I hope I pronounced that right. Maybe I asked Steve Baker, my program director. He'd probably come in and tell me that's not how it's pronounced. But anyway, Yahoo's Finance, Sianna Smith and Adam Shapiro discuss with King's College business professor Brian Brenberg the coming collapse of China, author Gordon Chang. But the emphasis of this article is, Trump tweeted that the talks are going well. So everybody says, oh, okay, maybe he realizes the tariffs are pretty much destroying things, and we're going to try to work this out. And so that may be the thing, you know. Any case. So that was, I wanted to bring that up as well. The market is about ready to close. It's 12:55 and 33 seconds Pacific Standard Time, November 1st, 2018, year of our Lord. Thank you for joining me today. And today's show has been entitled The Market Route. No, Falls Fall or The Falls Route. So we're going to wrap up the show here. And there's the money chinger that you could tell. So today's show, all the shows are available on moneymanagementradio.com. That is a free website. There's no charges on that website at all. Nobody's making any money on that website. You can just get all the shows and a newsletter. Agrata, it's free. Go to moneymanagementradio.com if you want that information. And it's free. It's our way of saying thank you for listening to your community radio station. It's our way of saying thank you for listening to your community radio station. You can get all the shows there. It usually takes about 2 weeks to post a show. And remember, discussions in this newscast should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice, and is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I am an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, registered investment advisor. Indices mentioned are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Investing involves risk. Depending on types of investments, there may be varying degrees of risk. Investors should be prepared to bear loss, including total loss of principal, which we hope won't happen. My name's Mark. Remember, money isn't the most important thing. It's your family, your friends, your health, your spirituality, helping your community. Invest in your community. Then after you've done all that, go make some money. My name's Mark. Have a great day.
Don't get me